Hello, welcome to the Saturn edition of your local talking newspaper covering St. Albans and the surrounding district. This edition is for the week ending February 9th, 2019. I'm Michael Henry, one of your readers for tonight, and I'm joined in the studio by Kalpana Block, Peter Block, and Alison Evans. The piece of music you have just heard is called Ode to Bohemia, and we will play all of it at the end of this recording. As usual, our thanks go to Goffby, who composed the music and has given us permission to use it. All the news items in this recording have been taken from the Hearts Advertiser, and we will finish with a summary of the radio programmes we think you might enjoy over the next week. Here is Kalpana with the first item.
Hello. So, this first article, Orange Illuminations for Children's Mental Health, is accompanied by a picture of St Albans Cathedral lit up brightly in orange to celebrate the district's first Children's Mental Health Week. City centre landmarks have been illuminated orange to commemorate the district's first Children's Mental Health Week and to raise awareness of the It's OK to Say campaign. St Albans Cathedral and Museum and Gallery have been transformed for the duration of the week, with orange ribbons and banners at key locations around the Old Town Hall, and both buildings coloured orange with special lighting at night. It's OK to Say strives to encourage people of all ages to discuss issues surrounding mental health and seek proper support when necessary, and is run by anxiety specialist Stacey Turner in conjunction with Hearts Advertiser. This year's Children's Mental Health Week is based around the theme of being healthy inside and out, focusing on the importance of physical and mental well-being working together, and supports the school-based support charity Place to Be. As well as the visual displays, the museum also hosted a drop-in session with Stacey and the campaign's mascot, Oki the Bear, on market day. Stacey explained, "Acknowledging the national campaign, I wanted to carry this across our city and inspire our community. It's been a real team effort to pull this off across our city's landmarks, businesses, organisations, and with special thanks to the individuals involved. But bear with us until the next issue, as we shall share more about this incredible week with a goal to inspire you." Councillor Annie Brewster, portfolio holder for Sport, Leisure and Heritage on the District Council, who helped arrange the light-up, said, "The St Albans Museum and Gallery is delighted to support the St Albans It's OK to Say campaign this week. The Town Hall and Courthouse have turned orange to highlight Children's Mental Health Week, with ribbons on the internal and external pillars, and our colour-changing lights on the balcony, the glazed links and the assembly room and the courtroom lantern set to orange. Most of the challenging emotional issues we face in our lives grow out of our very young childhood experiences. Therefore, it is vital to shine a bright light on what healthy relationships can be. My elderly parents believed one did not show or indeed share one's emotions. But identifying the consequences of this, I have enjoyed an incredibly open relationship with my own children and believe we are all healthier for it." St Albans Cathedral has also been saying prayers at every evening service throughout the week for children struggling with mental health issues, and particularly for the work of It's OK to Say. Sub-Dean Reverend Canon Abby Thompson said, "St Albans Cathedral is honoured to be supporting Children's Mental Health Week, and especially the work of the local campaign It's OK to Say, by lighting the walls of the cathedral in bright orange from Monday until Sunday. We hope that the cathedral will always be a place of warmth and welcome for those who are going through tough times, and the doors are open every day for people who might want to share some quiet space and the opportunity to light a candle. There are regular day chaplains at the cathedral who are happy to listen to anybody who needs to talk." The initiative has also received the support of DJ Jungle's Adventure in St Albans, with their monkey mascot wearing an It's OK to Say t-shirt on Tuesday. And St Albans City Football Club, who invited Stacey to meet the players at Clarence Park on Monday night. Helen Whittington from DJ's Jungle Adventure said, I was delighted to see Stacey and support her in raising awareness of Children's Mental Health Week locally in St Albans. Our bodies and minds are connected, and playing with our children is a simple thing we can offer to improve our physical well-being, which in turn can help our children's mental well-being too. Stacey also made her regular monthly appearance on the Radio Verulam show West Hearts Drive Time with presenter Danny Smith, who said, as our mental health correspondent on my radio show, we are delighted to hear all about how some of the city's most magnificent landmarks have been turned orange to show their support for this worthwhile campaign. We are really proud of Stacey and all of her efforts as part of It's OK to Say. And we also loved meeting their new mascot.
Hello, my first piece has the headline, Not Enough in the Budget for New A&E Hospital. NHS bosses have ruled out building a new A&E hospital central to St Albans, Watford and Decorum after being given a spending limit of £350 million. West Hearts Hospital Trust, WHHT, and Hearts Valley Clinical Commissioning Group, HVCCG, have rejected calls to build an acute A&E hospital in West Hertfordshire in favour of renovating existing services at St Albans City, Hemel Hempstead and Watford General Hospitals. In a meeting on Tuesday, January the 29th, the NHS regulator, NHSI, told the Trust affordability is a major constraint and that with any new proposal must be within the Trust's annual turnover of the £350 million. Members of the New Hospital Campaign argue that other hospitals within the same capacity are needed for West Hearts have been built for £350 million or less, and that a new hospital would be a better long-term care solution for the growing population. Initially, WWHTS's Strategic Outline Case, SOC, required an investment of £600 to £800 million to redevelop both Watford General in Vicarage Road, Watford and St Albans City, which were rejected by NHSI. Campaigner Andy Love said, New hospital campaigners lived in hope that after their rejection of the SOC, NHSI were now backing the residents' call for a new A&E hospital for West Hearts and the two government petitions with over 20,000 signatures between them supporting the campaign. Spending only £350 million on the three current hospital sites will bring nothing more than a patch-up along with the high risk of unnecessary disruption of patient care. The government want West Hearts to accommodate 150,000 more residents in the next 15 years without appearing to be planning for the necessary new infrastructure that would be needed to cope with such rapid growth. This is, my view, is both short-sighted and irresponsible. The New Hospitals campaign advisor Robert Scott submitted an FOI, Freedom of Information, request to WHHT asking them to detail the physical conditions of the hospitals in their remit. The survey's executive summary showed that around £200 million is needed over the next 10 years to maintain the three sites without improving their functionality or design. Andy Love said, the executive summary clearly shows that the three current hospital sites are in very poor state and need substantial investment over the next 10 years just to remain operational. West Hearts residents need to know why they are being denied the new A&E hospital they deserve. In my opinion, this fixation on keeping acute services at Vicarage Road is unhealthy and needs to be reviewed at the highest level. In last week's meeting, WHHT and HVCCG said they will not pursue the option of a new single-site emergency and planned care hospital because it cannot be built within available finances. They've also been told that a proposal needs to be completed during the summer in order to be considered for the comprehensive spending review, a funding round that normally runs on a five-year cycle. NHS managers, clinicians and independent experts are now considering options which involve retaining emergency and critical care at Watford General and either developing Hemel Hempstead Hospital for medicine and St Albans Hospital for surgery, centralising all planned care in either Hemel or St Albans, or replacing both sites with a new planned care central hospital. Their work would then be presented to a panel including health and care professionals, patients and community representatives, local authority partners and Health Watch. Another public meeting will be held in early March to explain the options in more detail and seek people's views in an early summer panel that will make a recommendation to the boards of both NHS organisations. The proposals will seek to include as much new build as can be afforded, but £350 million will not be enough to rebuild all the emergency and planned care facilities. WHHT's Acting Chief Executive, Helen Brown, said, "We have a fantastic opportunity to transform services and deliver urgent and much-needed improvements to our hospital buildings. Given the financial constraints, any option involved would compromise, but we are determined to find a solution that will bring real benefits to patients and staff and will satisfy our regulators so that we are top of the list for funding."
Hello. My first story is a follow-up to the previous story with a response from St Albans MP Anne Main, who has voiced concerns about the future of St Albans City Hospital following news that NHS bosses will not build a new A&E hospital for West Harts. NHS bosses ruled out building a new hospital central to St Albans, Watford and Decorum after being given a £350 million spending limit. Mrs Main said, "I am extremely concerned that one of the suggestions under consideration raises the prospect of services either being downgraded or removed from St Albans City Hospital. While I welcome the step forward in planning for future healthcare services, I am completely opposed to the removal of any services from the city site. St Albans City is a thriving and busy hospital with many local people relying on the services there. To suddenly remove services to try and build up Hemel would cause huge disruption for many local people."
And the next item has the title, "Heartbroken and Sad, Fundraisers Speak Out After Charity Shop Raid." The chairman of a charity for deaf children has been left devastated after his St Albans charity shop was raided overnight. The charity shop in Hatfield Road was burgled sometime overnight between Thursday and Friday, January 31st to February 1st. The shop belongs to CADECT, which stands for Kashmiri and African Deaf Children's Trust. Charity chairman Mohammed Akhtar turned up on Friday morning to find the premises had been turned upside down and the till had been smashed. He said, "It makes me feel really sad. There wasn't very much in the till, only a float. When you think of disabled children, something like this breaks your heart. The till isn't very old, and when I bought it, it cost £400. It will cost more to replace the till than what was in it. At a minimum, you're looking at £500. Burglars got in by removing one of the panels from the door. The last time the shop was broken into was about 12 years ago. Mr. Akhtar added, "All the local people know us. We're next to Tesco. My motivation in speaking out about the break-in is to make people aware of what sort of people are about, people who have no heart." Mr. Akhtar set up CADECT in 2002, after being born in Kashmir in northern Pakistan and having fathered a daughter who is deaf. In 2004, he set up a school in Kashmir, and it was only while he was on holiday in Gambia he realised the poverty the children had to live with. Before CADECT, Gambia only had one school for deaf children in its capital, which restricted access for people living on the south side of the river, which divides the country. The charity's trustees decided to open a school for Gambia's deaf children in the town of Bass, south of the river, which has now been running for a number of years. Mr. Akhtar is grateful for the support the charity receives from the people of St. Albans. He said, "We have been very lucky here to have two shops, and we have raised quite a good amount through both shops over the years. People are very kind, bringing things in and buying things."
Nearly 600 burglaries from 2018 remain unsolved across the district. There were 519 burglaries in St Albans district last year, where no suspect was identified, according to recently published statistics. The month of 2018 with the most unsolved burglaries was January, with 96 in total, while December had the fewest with only 19. As December was only recently, it is likely that many burglary cases remain open while police look for suspects, as the statistics only show burglaries where the investigation was completed with no suspect being found. Of the burglaries, 464 were in St Albans, while 127 were in Harpenden. There were 872 burglaries in total in 2018, meaning that in 281 cases, police were able to identify those responsible. A Hearts police spokeswoman said, "Tackling burglary and those who commit these offences remains a priority in St Albans, as we understand the impact this crime has on victims. As part of our ongoing response, we have drawn on the additional central resources to create high visibility and covert patrols in our efforts to identify and arrest offenders. A response to burglary may not immediately result in an arrest, but everything is done to ensure that all the evidence is captured and we never give up on a case. We utilise the full forensic toolkit available to us to build a profile of offenders. This includes, where possible, recovering DNA samples and other identifying material, which is kept on a database that is constantly referred to when offenders are brought into custody. Often, when a suspect is arrested on suspicion of committing one burglary offence, they will later be forensically linked or admit to carrying out a whole host of other break-ins, and we always go back to the victims to update them of this. In many of these unsolved burglary cases, inquiries remain ongoing, and we work with other forces to identify offenders who may have come from outside the area to target homes in St Albans. St Albans and Hertfordshire as a whole remains a safe place to live and work. And while statistics give us an insight into crime trends, they are just one part of a more complex crime picture that doesn't fully reflect the harm burglary causes and the work being done behind the scenes to bring offenders to justice.
Don't flip out. It's only the return of the pancake race. Frying pans at the ready. It's time to register for this year's Great St Albans Pancake Race. Local businesses, organisations and charities are invited to enter a team for the annual races and compete for the prestigious title of Flipping Winners. The first pancake race in St Albans was held 9 years ago and has since become a well-established tradition in the district calendar, with regular crowds of over 200 spectators gathering to watch and cheer the teams on. Local children and families charity, Home Start Hearts, took on the organisation and running of the event 3 years ago in conjunction with the Hearts Business Independent. It has generated nearly £2,000 for the charity over the last 2 years, which has gone towards supporting struggling local families. The festival takes place on Shrove Tuesday, March the 5th, in the Market Square in front of St Albans Museum and Gallery. The races will start at 12 noon and all teams must arrive by 11:30 a.m. to sign in. Teams will have the option of entering the traditional running race or alternatively the Flipping Walkers race if they've no taste for speed. This year there will also be a Parents and Tots race and a Mascot race. Home Start Hearts strategic manager Susie Moody said, "This event is just great. It brings the community together, raises the profiles of our local businesses, supports local families in need, and is so much fun. I may be biased, but I think it's up there as one of St Albans' best events." Simon George, publisher of the Hearts Business Independent, added, "We are looking forward to welcoming the new teams from local businesses and organisations, as well as the regulars who have become competing for many years." Local law firm SA Law is the headline sponsor for the event, and Marilyn Bell from the firm said, "We are very pleased to be continuing supporting the Pancake Festival Day in St Albans and Home Start Hearts, who will benefit from this fantastic event. We look forward to seeing you at the starting line." Entry is £40 per team, although charities can register for free by contacting the Flipping team at events@buzzing-media.co.uk for a discount code. Teams should be made up of 4 people and registration is via http://pancake.events. There will be a children's entertainment on the day and a raffle with proceeds going to Home Start Hearts. This piece is accompanied by a very enthusiastic competitor from one of the teams from last year flipping a pancake.
My next piece is about the train service in St Albans, with the headline, New Timetable Could Impact on Services and Capacity at Station. Train stopping at St Albans station could be cut in a new wave of changes set to shake up the schedule. The possibility of another reorganisation of the Thames Link timetable will be discussed at a meeting on February the 11th with Hitchin and Harpenden MP Bim Afolami, Govia Thames Link Railway, GTR, and the Association of Public Transport Users, APTU. St Albans Liberal Democrats say changes to the Thames Link Express calling pattern planned for May 2019 could include fewer trains at St Albans City Station or more stops along the line, reducing capacity. An APTU survey is currently accepting responses ahead of the meeting. This comes after last year's commuting chaos when East Midlands trains stopped calling at Bedford and Luton in May and passengers faced months of delays and cancellations. Currently, there is no representative exclusively for St Albans passengers planned to attend the meeting, although APTU, St Albans District Council and Herts County Council remit covers the whole line, including St Albans, Harpenden and Luton will have dedicated representatives. Coordinator of the St Albans Commuter and Passenger Action Group and Lib Dem parliamentary candidate Daisy Cooper said the best solution was to restore East Midlands stops at Bedford and Luton. Quote, "The decision to exclude us at such a crucial meeting is appalling and unjustified and smacks of another stitch-up between Thames Link and the Tory government," end quote. St Albans District Councillor Jackie Taylor urged all commuters and passengers to complete APTU's survey. Hitchin and Harpenden MP Bim Afolami said, quote, "No decision about services to St Albans has been made and no decision will be made without St Albans representatives present. All the meetings I have had and will have in the future will be about securing better train services for Hitchin and Harpenden," end quote. A spokesperson from GTR said reducing services to St Albans is unlikely as it poses a safety issue and that St Albans is represented through SADC and APTU. Quote, "The meeting we are holding next week with passenger representatives and MPs is to provide information on passenger demand and what changes to calling patterns are feasible," end quote. APTU did not respond to requests for comment.
And the next item follows on from that piece, and it's entitled Train Companies Score in Bottom 5 After Customer Satisfaction Survey. Great Northern and Thames Link Railways have both seen a decline in customer satisfaction, according to a survey by independent transport watchdog Transport Focus. According to the results of a questionnaire, Great Northern had the lowest overall satisfaction of all 25 rail companies across the UK, at 68%, while Thames Link was in the bottom 5 at 77%. The number of passengers who rated the service for punctuality and reliability as satisfied or good declined by 13% for Thames Link and 14% for Great Northern since last spring. Govia's chief executive, Patrick Verwer, said, "The results on Great Northern and Thames Link reflect the significant disruption passengers experienced following the May timetable change, which was caused by industry-wide factors. Punctuality and reliability for our passengers are now firmly back on track, at higher levels than a year ago. We are now running 400 more daily services, with space for 50,000 more commuters to and from London. This May we will be adding still more services between Brighton and Cambridge, and on Great Northern we are about to replace Britain's oldest electric trains with a brand new air-conditioned fleet. We are improving the way we help passengers when services don't run on time, and our frontline staff have new smart devices to share latest information. The survey results also found that 36% of respondents believed punctuality and reliability had the biggest impact on their overall satisfaction, while how train companies dealt with delays contributed to dissatisfaction at 48%. Passengers from across Hearts, Beds and South Cambridgeshire suffered with major delays and cancellations following the introduction of a new timetable in May last year. Other train companies in the bottom five for satisfaction included TransPennine Express, Greater Anglia and Northern Services, while the top five for satisfaction were Heathrow Express, Grand Central, Chiltern Railways, Hull Trains and Virgin Trains, to which passengers gave a 90% overall satisfaction rating, while 84% of respondents saying they were satisfied with its punctuality and reliability. To read the full list of results, search Transport Focus National Rail Passenger Survey.
Deaf swimming. And this next article is accompanied by a lovely picture of a little girl in a swimming pool wearing a bright yellow swimming cap and bright red goggles. So, pupils from a school for deaf in St Albans have earned gold and silver medals in the National Swimming Championship. Primary age children from Heathland School defend their title at the Panathlon National Deaf Swimming Finals at the London Aquatic Centre on Tuesday, January the 22nd. Older children also took home the silver medal at the National Deaf Secondary Final on Tuesday the 29th of January. In the championship, pupils compete against deaf swimmers from across England from a variety of schools, and they also compete in a variety of races and aquatic challenges. In the primary event, Heathland's pupils beat their nearest rivals, Elmfield School in Bristol, by 22 points, with 139 points in total. Pupil Philippa Anderson, aged 14, said, "When I started today, I was nervous, but I feel good when I'm in the water. I get a real sense of achievement when I get out and I see my teammates clapping. It's amazing to be here in this giant arena."
Armed police rushed to a back garden in St Albans because a man was allegedly being threatened with a knife. Hearts police were called to Rodney Avenue at about 2:15pm on Sunday after reports that a man was threatening another man in a back garden. The people involved are believed to know each other. Initial reports alleged there was a knife, hence why armed police were called. Anyone with information should report it to police at 101 or Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. A follow-up section to this piece is the subtext of this is that Shah Ali, 30, of Rodney Avenue, has been charged with using threatening, abusive or insulting words or behaviour to cause harassment, alarm or distress. He has been bailed and was due to appear at St Albans Magistrates Court last Tuesday.
A St Albans motorist was fined £100 after a crash left a cyclist seriously injured. Tanya Begum, 20, admitted driving without due care and attention when she appeared at Stevenage Magistrates Court on January the 17th. The court heard how, on June the 23rd, shortly before 10:10pm, Begum had been driving a Vauxhall Corsa in St Albans when the crash happened at traffic lights. Begum was at the junction for Victoria Street, Beaconsfield Road and Alma Road and wanted to turn right from Alma Road onto Victoria Street. The cyclist was travelling along Beaconsfield Road and wanted to continue straight across, meaning the cyclist had the right of way. The defendant failed to see the cyclist as she came through the green light and failed to wait and turned right into her path. The cyclist and defendant's vehicle collided and the cyclist came off her bike, suffering serious injury. In addition to the fine, Begum of Delfield was ordered to pay victim services £30 and costs of £85. 5 penalty points were issued.
Patients left high and dry as hospital bus stop closed. Buses are not stopping at St Albans City Hospital, forcing patients to walk or pay for a taxi to make appointments. due to roadworks blocking Waverley Road, both the 653 UNO and the 301 Arriva services cannot access the usual hospital stop until February the 22nd. Buses will instead take passengers via Batchwood Drive, Verulam Road, Folly Lane and Normandy Road if they do not simply terminate in St Albans city centre. It is about a 15-minute walk from St Peter's Street to the hospital. A resident of the area, Angie Davison, said, "I live nearby, so it doesn't affect me, but I walk into town and see some of the people who are affected, the older people. I think it is awful that the only way to get to the hospital is to walk or taxi. They can get as far as town, but there was lots of confusion there." Angie says she was not notified of the works and has encountered several confused older people waiting fruitlessly at the bus stop. Hearts County Councillor Roma Mills added, "If you are an elderly person, if you aren't feeling great, and if you live in the immediate area and rely on the bus, you will have a problem." To exacerbate the confusion, Councillor Mills said diversion signs were not initially in place. "The issue is, people don't know about it. There were no diversion signs. I believe those are being put up now, but they were not up as they started." The roadworks are being managed by Matthew Holmes and carried out by Ashvale Civil Engineering to facilitate the Waverley Green development. Councillor Mills said, "I understand it has got to be done. We need to improve the road, but it seems that there were no diversion signs, no prior warning that the roadworks are being done. It shows a total lack of respect and it is a strong disincentive to not take the bus." Hertfordshire's Local Transport Plan 2018 to 2031, created by Herts County Council, HCC, aims to discourage car use and work to enhance the attractiveness of bus travel. A spokesperson from HCC apologised for the disruption. "The bus stop has been temporarily closed to facilitate essential highways works in Waverley Road, including construction of a new junction and removal of a traffic island. These started on Monday 28 January and will take another 2 weeks to complete."
Hit and run. Police are appealing for witnesses and dashcam footage after a hit-and-run crash in Redbourne left a man in his 60s injured. The collision happened around 5pm last Thursday, the 31st of January, on the Redbourne bypass, generating widespread traffic jams reaching as far back as South Down in Harpenden. A grey BMW saloon was in collision with a dark-coloured vehicle, which failed to stop at the scene. The driver of the BMW, a man in his 60s, suffered cuts and bruises as a result of the collision. His car also suffered extensive damage. PC Dale Morris from the Beds and Cambridge and Harts Road Policing Unit said, "We are appealing for anyone who was using the Redbourne bypass at the time of the incident and has a dash cam installed in their vehicle to please make contact with us. Any witness should contact PC Morris on dale.morris@harts.pnn.police.uk, quoting ISR 562 of January the 31st.
Co-op charity funding. Community groups in Hertfordshire are set to receive several thousands of pounds from the Co-op's local community fund. St Albans Sea Cadets and Royal Marine Cadets, St Albans District Woodcraft Folk and Friends of London Coney Primary and Nursery School are three of the nine causes to receive the money. When Co-op members purchase own brand products, 1% goes to a local cause. Recent figures from the Charity Commission show that 40% of charities survive on an income of less than £10,000, meaning that the funding raised by the Co-op members will have a significant impact on the difference cause can make to in their community. Rebecca Birkbeck, Director of Community Engagement at the Co-op, said, "The more people shop, the more we share, and the more impact we can have on the communities. People can get involved by becoming a member, swiping their card and choosing the cause they want to support."
Want to help the city centre's rough sleepers? A new initiative offers best practical advice. Advice is being offered on how to help rough sleepers on the streets of St Albans. An information leaflet entitled Concerned About a Rough Sleeper has been produced by St Albans District Council and contains practical advice on what to do if you have seen a rough sleeper in the street. The booklet explains, in a question and answer format, what is being done for rough sleepers by the council and voluntary organisations, including Open Door, Centre 33 and Emmaus, as well as Hightown Housing Association, the Cathedral and St Albans Community Mental Health Team. Among other activities, the council and Open Door fund outreach workers who talk to rough sleepers to ensure they are aware of the help on offer and to encourage them to take it up. The leaflet also highlights the extra beds which are made available in St Albans during severe weather. However, some rough sleepers choose to remain on the streets, usually for complex reasons. Open Door, for example, does not allow people to stay in its shelter if they are clearly under the influence of drink or illegal drugs. One night in November last year, the council carried out an annual count of rough sleepers in the district, estimating there were 11 in total. There were 5 found in 2017, 13 in 2016, 19 in 2015, and 11 in 2014. The figures must be obtained every year and submitted to the government. Councillor Brian Ellis, portfolio holder for Housing and Inclusion, said, "The leaflet offers practical advice to people who are troubled by the sight of a rough sleeper and want to do something. It tells them how they can refer to someone for help and lists the contact details of a number of appropriate groups. I hope it will make people aware that the council, together with other organisations, is working hard behind the scenes to help rough sleepers and to put them on a new pathway. I would also urge people who want to help to consider volunteering to work with one of the charities that is active on this issue or to make a regular donation. The leaflet has been distributed to different points around the district, including libraries and other public buildings."
Here are the names of people who have recently died, as published in this week's Hearts Advertiser. Jennifer Ashley, aged 68. Carmella Martin, aged 81. Rex Blythe, aged 90. Michael Lavender Jones, aged 91. Karen Taylor, aged 61. Beatrice Beasley, no age given. John Turner, no age given. Terry Baker, no age given. May they rest in peace. And the next item, a scout troop in Radlett has officially reopened in time for its centenary celebrations. The first Radlett Scouts closed in July 2018 after the previous leaders left and now welcomes new leaders Alex, James P, Maddie, Gemma, Jasmine and James W. The group was registered on May 16, 1919, and the Scouts will be holding a centenary celebration with past members and leaders on Saturday, June 29th, as well as several joint events with the Radlett Guides, who are also celebrating their centenary. First Radlett Scouts are looking for new members between 10.5 and 14 years old. There are also spaces in the Cub Pack for children between 8 and 10.5.
3-year-old twins, Isla and Lottie, are pictured here holding hands, smiling, wearing matching pink and grey dresses in an article entitled "Family of Cancer Fight Isla are proud to be supporting CLIC or CLIC World Cancers Day." The family of a toddler who was gravely ill have spoken out in support of World Cancer Day after they were helped by the St Albans community to raise more than £135,000. In early 2018, St Albans residents rallied together to help the then 2-year-old Isla Austin, who needed treatment to stop a high-risk neuroblastoma from reappearing. In a matter of months, the Leverstock Green family had collected £135,000 for a clinical trial of the bivalent vaccine at New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. Since having the treatment, Isla is still in remission, but being checked regularly to make sure the tumours do not return, she will not be out of danger until at least 5 years clear. On World Cancer Day on Monday, the Austins were actively supporting Click Sargent, a cancer charity for children and young people. Dad Rick, aged 40, said, "The emotions change as you go along the journey, really. At first, we felt shock and anger. And then, after coming to terms with it, we wanted to get on with it and just be there for Isla. Everything just changes overnight when you get that diagnosis. One day, things are quite normal, and the next day, everything is different." During treatment at Great Ormond Street's hospital, Isla's family received practical, emotional and financial support from Click Sargent's social worker. Rick said, "We're proud to be wearing our Band Against Cancer wristbands and supporting Click Sargent this World Cancer Day, because they made a huge difference to me and my family at an awful time." Click Sargent's senior fundraising and engagement manager for London and the South East, Hannah Lavender, said, "Donating and getting your Band Against Cancer wristband is a simple way to show your support for Click Sargent and families like Isla's on World Cancer Day. Every day, 12 more children and young people in the UK will hear the devastating news that they have cancer. Cancer costs for families, and in many ways, but with your help, Click Sargent can fight for these families by providing practical, emotional and financial support to help minimise the damage cancer causes them beyond their health."
Runner prepares for a month of marathons to collect £4,000 and mark his birthday. A determined St Albans runner is celebrating his 44th birthday by trying to raise £4,000 doing 4 marathons in the 4th month of the year. Starting in April, Gary Thorpe is going to compete in a different marathon each week: the Greater Manchester Marathon, Brighton Marathon, the Virgin Money London Marathon and the Enigma Easter Series in Milton Keynes. He wants to raise a total of £4,000 for the Leonard Cheshire Disability and Teenage Cancer Trust, TCT, the latter after learning about their work last year. Gary coined the challenge his April Fool. He said, "Last year I had the luck to get into the London Marathon with the ballot, so I ran it for the official charity, the TCT. And while doing that, I learned so much about what they do, so I thought I'd raise some more." TCT says, "It's the only charity providing young people with specialist cancer care. The 2018 London Marathon was the hottest on record, and Gary ran it much slower than he would have liked. His total time, combined with helping a fellow runner for the last 9 miles, was about 5 hours and 40 minutes. Batchwood resident Gary said, "It felt good, but I thought I could have done it quicker. It was hot, horribly hot, compared to all the training that we went through in the cold. To turn up in the London for the hottest London Marathon ever was a bit annoying, and there was a bit of unfinished business there. My training is happening now. It is slowly getting more and more daunting as it gets closer. I'm wondering what I have signed myself up for." The April Fool idea seemed to make sense at the time, Gary quipped. He started running a couple of years ago after a serious knee injury meant he could not play football. However, before the London Marathon last year, Gary had only run 10Ks and half marathons. The Leonard Cheshire Disability Charity supports disabled people to live, learn and work as independently as they can. The article is accompanied by a picture of Gary powering through in his run of the London Marathon in 2018.
The next story is about a diamond wedding anniversary. A St Albans couple will celebrate their 60th wedding anniversary on Valentine's Day. Pat and Jim Rushby of Batchwood Drive became pen pals in 1955, whilst Jim was in Egypt on national service. The letters helped Jim stay strong throughout his time of serving. He said, "At the time I hated it, but it turned out to be the best thing ever. It was all meant to be." Pat wrote to Jim as she heard from a friend he wasn't getting much post. He decided he must get to know Pat in real life, and so went to her hometown in St Albans when he was on leave. They married in the Lady Chapel of the Abbey on February the 14th, 1959, and went on to have two sons and a daughter. Jim said, "Pat chose Valentine's Day so I would never forget the date, and I haven't." Jim advised that for a happy marriage, it's important to marry someone beautiful, quote. The story is accompanied by a picture of Jim and Pat standing outside the Abbey with their best man, bridesmaids and a flower girl. And inset into this picture is a picture of Jim and Pat today, 60 years later, and still smiling.
And now on to some of the radio highlights that you might like to listen to during the week ahead. And to start with, a couple of suggestions for Saturday evening, February 9th. In Archive on 4 at 8 p.m. on Radio 4, Matthew Sweet traces a history of violence. The idea for the programme took root when Matthew was taking his daughter to see potential secondary schools recently. What surprised him most was the huge change in the profile of PE teachers at schools today and their approach to instructing pupils. In his era at school, PE teachers were largely sergeant major types who dragooned boys by fair means or foul and often humiliated pupils who didn't come up to the mark. Matthew tweeted about his impressions of the sadism involved in teaching sport when he was at school, and he was deluged with responses from people who shared his experiences. So this programme is the result, as Matthew Sweet haunts the gyms, playing fields and changing rooms of PE's past to interrogate former PE teachers. Archive on 4 starts at 8 p.m. on Radio 4 on Saturday. If you're interested in the politics of the moment, then you'll probably want to tune in to the play that follows Archive on 4 at 9 p.m. The politics of the moment aren't Brexit, you'll be relieved to hear. They're US politics, and the drama is called Mueller, Trump Tower, Moscow. It was first broadcast last Sunday, but if you missed it then, this is the chance to catch up. Robert Mueller, you'll recall, is the attorney leading the investigation into the possible links between Donald Trump and Russia during the 2016 election campaign. The play has been written by Jonathan Meiserson, and in it he unravels the story so far. It's very well done and worth a listen at 9 p.m. on Radio 4 on Saturday.
Turning now to Sunday, February the 10th, when Lauren Laverne's Castaway on Desert Island Discs is Cressida Dick, Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. She'll choose the 7 pieces of music she'd take with her to a desert island and talk about her high-profile career from 11:15 on Sunday morning on Radio 4. Following on from that, fans of Just a Minute will be pleased to hear that it returns to Radio 4 at 12:04 on Sunday for a new series. Tony Hawks, Josie Lawrence, Giles Brandeth and Angela Barnes will try to talk on a given subject for a minute without hesitation, repetition or deviation, and Nicholas Parsons presides. Two programmes on Sunday afternoon on Radio 4 explore the nature of dementia. Memories, identity, imagination, as well as the tragic comedy that the condition brings are the themes of the drama at 3 p.m. on Radio 4, The Door in the Pillow. It's a play by Frank Cottrell Boyce reflecting the experiences of his own family, which he weaves into a humane and fast-moving ghost story. A little later at 4:30, also on Radio 4, the poet Lavina Greenlaw reads a sequence of poems portraying her father's death following his struggle with dementia. She interweaves her father's story with the fate of Prospero in The Tempest, and her father's plight acquires a universality that many will recognise. The Sea is an Edge and an Ending is the title of the programme, which starts at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon on Radio 4.
Each week there are a range of radio programmes which are broadcast each day from Monday to Friday at the same time. Next week, for instance, the Book of the Week at 9:45 each morning on Radio 4 is Amateur by Thomas Page McBee. In 2015, aged 34, McBee became the first trans man to fight at Madison Square Gardens in New York. His book explores the notion of masculinity and the fear that he experienced as he learned to box. An hour later at 10:45 and repeated in the evening at 7:45, the 15-minute drama is Lifelines. Set in the control room of an ambulance service in the southwest of England, responding to heart-rending and dramatic emergency calls that come in from the public. The call handler, Carrie, has her own personal problems to contend with, but in the deep of winter and with the ever-restricted resources, she copes with distraught callers reporting a choking baby, instructs an elderly man about giving CPR, and tries to calm a climber hanging off a cliff. Dramatic stuff, which is guaranteed to get your adrenaline pumping. Over on Radio 3 from Monday to Friday at 12 noon each day, the composer of the week is Max Bruch. If you're a fan, Donald MacLeod will be featuring the music Bruch wrote for violin, and Monday's programme includes Bruch's well-known first violin concerto, which lived up to his dictum that melody is the soul of music. Back on Radio 4, just after noon each day, and repeated at 10:45 in the evening, you can hear an adaptation of John Boyne's 2018 thriller, A Ladder to the Sky. A chance encounter with the celebrated author Eric Ackerman gives a would-be ambitious novelist, Morris Swift, an opportunity to ingratiate himself into the literary world.
Other radio highlights this coming week include, on Monday, February the 11th, Behind the Scenes, PJ Harvey. PJ Harvey is the only person to have won the Mercury Prize for the Album of the Year twice, and alongside her singing career, she has now moved into theatre work. In this programme, the singer-songwriter talks to John Wilson about the music that she has written for a new West End stage adaptation of the Hollywood film classic All About Eve, with Gillian Anderson starring in the role originally played by Bette Davis in the 1950s. Behind the Scenes, PJ Harvey starts at 4 on Radio 4 on Monday afternoon. Who needs politicians anyway? Sentiments we might all be tempted to voice at the moment. But it's also the title of a programme on Radio 4 on Wednesday, February the 13th at 11 a.m. and focuses on Northern Ireland. The resignation of Martin McGuinness as Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland in January 2017 triggered the collapse of the power-sharing government at Stormont. Since then, the province has been run by civil servants. The BBC's Ireland correspondent, Chris Page, talks to those at the front line of public services to see what impact the lack of ministers is having. Who Needs Politicians Anyway is at 11 a.m. on Radio 4 on Wednesday. In the evening, on Classic FM, the Full Works concert, starting at 8 p.m, features the work of Franz Schubert. Favourites include his Symphony No. 9 and also Ave Maria. Finally, a date with Friday Night is Music Night on Radio 2 on Friday, February the 15th. This is the first of three concerts showcasing iconic music stars. This Friday, the Leo Green Orchestra perform the greatest hits of Queen, including Don't Stop Me Now and Bohemian Rhapsody. A good way to end the week. Good listening over on Radio 2 from 8 on Friday evening.
We have now come to the end of this recording. So from me, Michael, Kalpana, Peter, Alison, and from Alex, who recorded and edited this edition, and Jill, who chose the radio selections, goodbye, and here's to the next time.